Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Soybean crush. We talk about it on the TV show quite often, but what exactly does it mean? And what happens if capacity expands at maybe a little too rapid of a rate and what's called undisciplined capital comes into play? What does that mean for those of you that grow soybeans? Tanner Emke is an economist with CoBank, and the Knowledge Exchange recently had a report about that soybean crush capacity. Tanner's role now is the lead grain and oilseed economist for CoBank. So we visit with him. We talk to him about specialty crops before and sports. We'll get into sports, but at the end this time, just if you were wondering. But what happens when all of these plants come on? Is there enough demand for soy oil, for renewable diesel, for biodiesel? One's up, one's down. We'll discuss that, but we'll also talk about the three-legged stool that's at place. That's all on this episode of the MTOM Show podcast. New episodes come out each and every Tuesday. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch us on YouTube. We kind of try to keep it interesting, flow back and forth. Put us on there in the background as you're doing some work. New episodes every Tuesday. This episode about soybeans now. CoBank still is a bank when it's all said and done, but you certainly are paying attention a lot to agriculture. I mean, that's your job, right, Tanner? That hasn't changed?
Agriculture is what we do all day, every day. We are part of the farm credit system. So what happens on the farm affects us every day.
And I don't remember, I mean, yes, I remember the 80s, of course, but the time where producers are looking at the interest rates so closely to determine what they do, right? I mean, we haven't seen this since the 70s and 80s, have we?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, we had back in the financial crisis of 08 and 09, obviously interest rates were a big thing back then, and they dropped rates very low for a very long time. And then, well, as you know, that environment changed quite radically. And so now here we are at this juncture on interest rates. Are we done? And the Federal Reserve has indicated that we are done with the rate hike cycle. But we'll see. You never know. I mean, the world can throw some odd things at you at any time. And so I think the market's preparing for what the Federal Reserve is saying. We're just going to have to take them at their word that we're going to see three rate cuts at some point this year. We'll see.
And the whole concept of what it is you do on a regular basis with grain and oil seeds is you're looking at the end user, not necessarily the end user, and their expansion or contraction is tied to the interest rate, it seems, right? That hasn't changed either, has it?
Interest rates are going to flow through the economy in ways that sometimes we can't foresee. But right now, as it is with interest rates being the highest they've been in quite some time, that's obviously a tighter monetary environment, and that puts upward pressure on the value of the dollar. And that tends to be a headwind to agriculture. Generally speaking, when you got a strong dollar, that means negative, or that's inversely correlated to commodity prices. And so when the dollar is up, commodity prices tend to go down.
Which is contrary to some of the old school thinking of a lower dollar is good for agriculture because it makes your goods more attractive in a global market.
Absolutely. Your exports become a lot cheaper. And so when you have a weakening dollar, that attracts a stronger export bid and the value of the commodities go up. So as it is right now, we're going to have to continue to go with this theory that the Federal Reserve is going to hold where they're at and until they see sufficient data that they can cut interest rates. And when they start doing that, that in theory is going to put some downward pressure on the value of the dollar and would be helpful to commodity prices.
But I hear from a couple of farmers that tell me don't get caught up in interest rates as you do. It's inputs that is the problem. But interest rates is part of that, but it's totally different. It's like the economy. It's not a simple on or off, yes or no. It's like 15 different switches that have to flow that a producer has to kind of take stock of before they can determine what's the most profitable thing to plant.
Yeah, the dollar is going to have impacts on all aspects of the farm. The positive with a stronger dollar is that your fertilizer becomes a lot cheaper because our purchasing power allows us to import more fertilizer. So because of that, that's going to cut your fertilizer bill. Your fuel bill is down. So there are some positives here with the strong dollar, but it's, you know, the other aspect here is that your borrowing costs are still high. And so, you know, that's another aspect of higher interest rates. So on the whole, you know, we're looking at a tighter year financially on the farm. I don't think that's any news to anybody. We've been talking about that for quite some time. When you have commodity prices coming down and the cost of production being so resilient, it's going to be hard to pencil a margin in that kind of environment.
Resilient. That's a fancy word for it's not going down.
Stubborn.
Stubborn. Yes. I'll have to use resilient next week, this week on the show. The common discussion point when we get to soybeans each week, it seems it comes up at least once a month on the show, is talked about this crush capacity, this crush, I dare say, tidal wave of new crush opportunities in the United States. How do you characterize what's about to come online for crush capacity in the United States?
Great question. We just came out with a report on that. And we just, for our report, took all of the announced expansions and put it all together and charted it out. And we're seeing a 23% increase in soybean crush capacity in the U.S. over the next 3 years. That's obviously friendly to soybean demand. That's going to put a stronger floor under local bids, in your local basis. If you have a new soybean crush plant coming online in your area, typically what that means is a 20-cent increase in your local basis. So if you're in one of those areas, yeah, you're absolutely going to benefit from this new crush capacity. That being said, crush margins are down. We had a couple record years of soybean crush margins, and that's benefited crush excuse me, a little sick here. You got a cold that my daughter brought home from her daycare center. A lot of soybean crushers are doing very well financially. Their balance sheets are extraordinarily strong. So even though we've seen crush margins drop off their record highs back to historical norms, we don't see any financial stress coming this year or perhaps even next year. The concern is what happens over time when you have crush margins persist at a low level, and perhaps there might be other additional stressors like higher transportation costs. So if you're a destination plant, as they call it, that means you're a soybean crush facility that's located outside of the main growing regions, and so therefore you depend upon transportation to have access to soybeans. Well, that's another risk to that plant, and so there's risk that transportation costs could go up. Or if you're in an area where there's strong competition for soybeans, let's say there's a couple of crush plants in a short vicinity within each other, one location, you could see soybean basis come up by a significant amount, and that could erode crush margins as well to levels that you didn't anticipate. And so at that point, then it becomes a concern about what is the break-even cost of production for that plant, and that's going to depend on each plant and what they spent on getting the plant built and what their borrowing costs were, the cost of construction, all of those things. And there could be some financial risk to some players over time. So that's really in the longer term view here.
And that's on the crusher side of things. But those providing the goods to the crush plant, bringing in the beans, when you talk about even rising over a 20-cent basis improvement and it goes higher, sounds like the farmer might benefit from that.
Absolutely. That's how it would play out in the near term as new plants come online in those local areas. That's for sure going to put in a stronger floor into their basis. That being said, I do need to point out we've got a lot of imports coming in. Canola oil, record high. Used cooking oil imports, record high. Palm oil imports, record high. So as we continue to see this flow of vegetable oils flowing into the U.S. At a record pace, that is going to dampen the story here for the crush story, because soybean oil is getting more of a becoming a more competitive environment, not just soybean oil, but vegetable oils at large. And so that's one reason to be cautious. But by and large, as you said, Paul, if you have a crush facility coming into your local area, that's for sure going to be a positive on your basis.
Is this similar at all to the grow out that we saw in the ethanol industry? I mean, is this following the pattern of where plants are built? And are these plants kind of in little vacuum spots or little, I guess if you use a football analogy, it's where Travis Kelce runs his route inside the zone?
That's the comparison everyone makes, is ethanol. We saw this before where a lot of capacity came online in very short order. The industry was overbuilt. And what happened? Margins eroded to negative level. And that caused a lot of your financially risky players to exit the industry. And those plants were sold at pennies on the dollar. And so the people who experienced that are looking at this expansion now and making the same comparison. We got to be careful. We have to be disciplined about the build out. And as I mentioned earlier, we fail the same way in the longer view. In the near term, we don't see that happening because balance sheets are so strong. But in the longer term, that is the concern when undisciplined capital perhaps starts coming into the industry. Then you start to see overbuild of capacity, and perhaps you might see some of those more risky investments have to be liquidated.
Undisciplined capital. That's a new one on me.
Let's just say, as people call it, the New York money.
Yeah.
The people who don't know about commodity cycles. They're not accustomed to commodity cycles. And then when bad times come, they pull the capital out. Or they say, we have to exit. And so those,
it seems risky.
Absolutely. Those are risky bets, of course. But that's what you see in these in commodity markets is a commodity industry will be overbuilt and the undisciplined capital that is not accustomed to the cycles that we are accustomed to in agriculture are then prompted to exit the industry and liquidate rather than pull out more cash and try to allow those investments to make it through a downturn. It's more of a reactionary response, and they pull out and liquidate.
And if it does build within 100 miles of something else, there's a chance it erodes that other facility too and takes them both down. I mean, that could happen like it did in ethanol.
Yeah, well, that could happen. Usually what's going to happen if one goes down, that makes the corn supply, or in this case, the soybean supply, more readily available. The basis is going to drop, and then the margins are going to improve for the other plant in that local area. So not all people would be affected equally. Some would actually benefit in that scenario.
You mentioned all the oils, the soybeans, the vegetables, the canola, the palm, all of those things that are coming in. We don't really have a market for vegetable oils where we make our own vegetable oils in this country, do we?
Well, soybean oil is the main.
Other than soybean oil.
Soybean oil, that's the big one. We have a little bit of canola oil. There are some other, camelina. You know, there's a lot of interesting, I'll use the word interesting ideas about some other oil seeds, but really it's all about soybeans in this country. All the other vegetable oils are imports, really, for the most part. Canola being the big one coming in from Canada. They're expanding their canola crush capacity up there to meet the needs of rising veg oil demand here for renewable diesel. And then palm oil imports are record high to backfill the food demand that is left vacant by all the soybean oil that's going into renewable diesel. And then you have used cooking oil. A lot of controversy there about this record increase of what's being branded or called used cooking oil is not actually used cooking oil. And this is all about used cooking oil coming in from China. And it's accused of being fraudulent sales. What they're taking is actually palm oil from Indonesia or those Southeast Asian countries, Malaysian, Indonesian, what have you. And then they heat it up and then call it used cooking oil and send it to the United States. That's not allowed. Palm oil is not supposed to be used in renewable diesel because it contributes to tropical deforestation. But that's what it's being labeled as, and perhaps there might be some restrictions there going down the road.
And like you said earlier, the it's the bad players that are going to maybe cause a big industry. So if I am a producer watching this with soybeans to send somewhere or hope to send somewhere, what's my watchful eye focused on first or second?
About where to send your soybeans?
Well, and just what should I be watching with these facilities? What do I like about what this industry provides me near term, but I also want it long term too?
I would say, first of all, if you have a new soybean crush plant coming online in your local area, check to see who it is. Who's behind it? Is it disciplined capital? Is it somebody who knows what they're doing? Is this somebody who's spent their lifetime or builds their entire business model around crushing soybeans, or they know agriculture? Those people are accustomed to the cycles in agriculture, and so they're not going to be surprised when margins erode for a period of time. That's going to be the disciplined capital, the patient capital, if you will. If those are the people that are building a plant in your area, generally speaking, I'd say you're probably safe. If the people that are coming in to build a plant are outsiders to agriculture, then perhaps you might want to ask a few questions about the longevity of that plant.
But by the time the ground moves and that thing's built, that ship may have gone too far. But I think we saw with the ethanol build out, there were a lot of those locally owned farmer co-op, you know, that farmer owned setups. And some of those are the ones who didn't survive because they did not have as much deep pockets to keep them going. So, I mean, there's that concern, right?
Exactly. How deep are the pockets? If they are industry players that have been around for a while and they've got strong balance sheets, you probably have nothing to be concerned about. And again, it goes back to the who is behind it. And if it is undisciplined capital and or, as you point out, Paul, they don't have the deep pockets there to withstand poor margins for a period of time, yeah, that'd be a reason for concern.
I'm still writing down undisciplined capital. I really think that's what we should name this episode. I think that would be good. When we talk crush, I guess I should have done this in the very beginning. It is oil, but there is meal that gets crushed, right? And biodiesel. These are all parts of those. I mean, I guess walk me through what is some of these typical new plants coming on? What are their specialties?
Well, historically, soybean meal has been the reason why you crush soybeans. And soybean oil was the byproduct. Very rarely would a rally in soybeans be lifted by soybean oil prices. It was always meal was the story and feed demand. And now that story has changed a fair amount. And now now the soybean oil is the leader in the crush. And so, you know, that's really the thing here that is different about this environment with soybeans. It's all about the soybean oil. So, what about the soybean meal? We got an issue there, but where are you going to send it? Our animal protein analyst at CoBank, Brian Ernest, he was one of the co-authors on the report, and he wrote a lot about this, provided a lot of his insights about the future feed demand here in the United States, and it's not going to be a phenomenal increase. A lot of people would think that because of all this very low-cost soybean meal that's going to be hanging around, that we're going to see a phenomenal increase in feed usage. And we just don't see it happening based on all the things that Brian writes about. He focuses mostly on the hog and the poultry sectors and the constraints there to increasing those animal numbers and those bird numbers. So the conversation then turns to what can we do or what does the environment look like for soybean meal exports? And that gets a little bit trickier. Southeast Asia is a very important destination, and we've got a lot of competition. Brazil has really come up as a major player in soybean meal exports. They replaced a lot of the exports coming out of Argentina because Argentina had a terrible drought, and their availability to crush and export soybean products was greatly reduced. So the United States and Brazil kind of tag-teamed, if you will, to fill that export void. This year, you're going to see Argentina come back with a record crop, or what looks to be a record crop. And Brazil, again, they're going to be there to export more soybean meal. So the export market on soybean meal is going to be pretty competitive. So If we're not going to be appreciably increasing demand domestically for the meal, then it becomes a price war for the export market. And we'll see where that goes. But it's going to cause some pain somewhere. And we write in the report, our view is that the pain will first probably be felt down in Argentina. They had a bad crush year last year because of their poor crop. A lot of plant capacity was idled. They are hurt financially, and now they have a new government that's proposing higher export taxes on meal and oil. That's not going to bode well, again, for those crushers. And so in a price war, they would be at a disadvantage.
Even though they need to push product to get some money back in to recover from a downed crop year because of the weather conditions. And again, Brazil rides into favor with, I mean, China has looked to Brazil for a lot of its soy issue. You don't see that changing?
Well, excuse me. Sorry about that, Paul. China is leaning more on Brazil for their soybean needs. Remember, China's got a huge amount of crush capacity. And they don't want to idle that. They don't want to idle that capacity. They're still probably going to be focused more on bringing in soybeans. In fact, the government here in their latest, their food policy is wanting to increase more soybean production in country. What does that tell you? They want soybeans to run, to push through their soybean crush facilities. They don't want to buy meal. They don't want to buy oil. They want to buy the soybeans or and keep those plants active. So what that means then is some of these other markets like Southeast Asia are going to be quite a bit more competitive. Not everybody is going to be able to meet that demand. Someone's going to have to be pushed to the sidelines. And our view is that that's probably going to be Argentina in the short term.
But I don't know how to say this. I'm concerned about all these new facilities coming on here in the U.S. of how did they do the math to figure the long, why did it look like that was a good idea to build some of these facilities?
The story here is twofold. You got to look at the three-legged stool of the crush. It's soybean meal, soybean oil, and soybeans. The soybean oil side of the story is strong because of renewable diesel. Although we've got imports competing with soybean oil, like canola imports, or canola oil imports, and palm oil imports, and used cooking oil imports, the story there is still strong because demand is still growing. And as long as it's a growing story, we've got growing demand. So that's a positive. The other positive here is on the soybean side. We are going to be reducing exports, making those soybeans available for domestic usage. And so as long as you've got a ready supply of soybeans, and as long as you've got a strong story there for the soybean oil side, the only concern left here is on the soybean meal side. And so the focus here really is going to depend upon how the other two legs of the stool, of this three-legged stool perform, soybean oil and soybeans. And right now, that's very positive going forward. But there are some locations, as I mentioned earlier, destination plants would be a concern, or plants that are going to be in competition with each other in a local area. That would also be a concern. Otherwise, the story on soybean crush is a positive one.
It's popular in politics right now to be talking about who owns these facilities. Are these all these plants themselves coming in as I guess friendly is a term that's hard to use, but American-owned companies. Because I had received a message, this was probably 12 months ago, 8 months ago, about, oh no, this new facility is coming on in North Dakota is Chinese-owned, and that's been shut down. What's the ownership groups of some of these facilities too?
When you look around the ownership of the plants that have been that announced, by and large, most of them are U.S. I wouldn't say that is a concern. But even then, Paul, even if they weren't U.S. owned, I don't know. I don't know if that would matter.
Yeah.
I don't think that would matter. They want the plant generally to succeed. If it's patient capital, it's going to make sure that it survives over the long haul. Undisciplined capital can come from any direction, U.S., non-U.S., doesn't matter. The point is it disciplined, focused? Is it patient capital, or is it undisciplined capital? And I think that's the bigger question.
Let's talk renewable fuels. You mentioned it a little bit on the biodiesel side of the ledger with this. Do we anticipate in the rest of 2024 that fuel is going to, biodiesel specifically, is going to be enough of that stool that you mentioned to help prop us up?
Well, a distinction here, biodiesel is declining. Renewable diesel is increasing. Renewable diesel is replacing biodiesel.
Okay.
And so when you, all told though, when you look at biodiesel plus renewable diesel, total capacity when combined is still growing, even though some of this biodiesel capacity is exiting the industry. The increase in renewable diesel is more than making up for it. So when you add those two together, it's still a very positive story longer term.
As you look at 24, as we record this, we're flirting with that $12 mark. We've kind of been up and down from it on a price for the raw commodity itself. Again, with our analysts saying when they come on and they look at the crush numbers, and does that, how much is what your world, how are your worlds colliding here in talking about supporting the overall bean price before we even get into weather issues and oversupply issues and Brazil and all of those things?
Well, like I said, it's going to be a stronger domestic bid in a local area. And so that's going to put a stronger floor under soybean prices for sure. And you can see the difference when you compare soybean prices to corn prices, looking at the soybean to corn price ratio, which is so often quoted. And the ratio would clearly tell you that there is a stronger story there for soybeans more than corn. And we're probably going to see that play out in the prospective plannings report. I'm not sure when you're going to air this, Paul, but that comes out.
Well, and that's the thing. When we get done, when this airs, we will know what our acreage number is. But the speculation has been acres really aren't going to change from what was released, you know, kind of last year. But anything that is changing is because corn doesn't seem to be profitable. So is that a good thing for soybeans when there's more acres of it?
That would make corn vulnerable to losing acres for sure.
Yeah.
That's my bet. I think soybeans are going to pick up a few acres.
Yep.
Maybe not what people had anticipated, but I think it's going to pick up a few. So I think the story is still there for soybeans. And then, of course, you know, we've got a record crop down in South America that's going to be shortening our shipping season. But some of that negative story goes away because the domestic story has been so strong.
What else do you see as 24 unfolds, big things in the soybean market?
Well, I think we've covered a lot here, Paul, but I still think that we got to keep an eye on these imports, record large imports. We'll see what happens there. We've got some other renewable diesel programs or biofuel programs around the world. They're going to be coming online over time. And that's going to be drawing on that soybean oil supply around the world. And that's going to be restricting how many tons of palm oil or canola oil or used cooking oil can flow to the United States. So over time here, I think we're going to see probably a stronger floor under soybean oil prices as that demand kicks in. And that's going to put a stronger floor under soybean prices.
I know farmers are always, they like to hear the word stronger floor.
Yeah. I'm reluctant to say rally because in today's price environment, that's hard to hold on to. But let's just say it's maintaining a value on soybeans relative to corn. You can see that play out in the futures market.
Do you see the story playing out longer than 24 right now?
What you're talking about? Capacity is growing over the next 3 years. And unless some of these plants are called off and some of the plans are no longer going to be followed through on, if a shovel isn't going to be put into the ground anymore for a new facility, that's obviously going to be taking capacity or expected capacity offline. But as it is right now, we got to go with what we know. And right now we are seeing continual expansion of capacity, and that's going to put more demand domestically out there for soybeans.
What's the scenario that takes the shovel and puts it back in the truck and never moves any dirt?
If investors start looking at the crush margins and get concerned,
yeah,
that perhaps they're not going to get their money back over a timeline that they are comfortable with. As we know, borrowing costs are still high. Construction costs are still high. Labor costs are still high. The cost of building a new plant is not coming down. And so as a result, that could scare away some investors, perhaps, or at least scare away the undisciplined capital. I got to drop that in again.
You have to. Tanner, as we leave, you're a big K-State guy, that Iowa State football game in the snow. Were you wishing you were maybe at that game? You know, or was it just like, I'm going to watch that one on TV?
I'm going to stay home. I'll watch basketball because it's indoors.
Yeah.
I prefer to stay warm.
Yeah, that looked cold. It looked miserable. And that was, at that point, more snow there in Kansas than we had in Iowa up until January. I mean, it was just a weird fall, early winter in that capacity.
Yeah, it's it didn't look fun. Reminds me of the Kansas City game.
Yeah. Against Miami?
I'm glad I wasn't there. Oh, yes. That was where Mahomes broke his helmet.
So cold it brittled his helmet. Unbelievable. Weather crazy. Extremes, that's the next episode with us, Tanner.
And that'll be about football, is what we're
That's right. Appreciate it. Tanner Emke, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks.
My thanks to Tanner Emke for his time. Hopefully we're all warm as we discuss commodities. And we appreciate you for logging on and watching this podcast. New episodes each and every Tuesday. If you have feedback for me, hit me up in an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.